Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva. And on this episode, I'll continue my discussion with Michael Dill, Director of Workforce Studies at the Association of American Medical Colleges. The AAMC released their workforce study on the current physician shortage and where we'll be at by the year 2033. Michael, in the last episode, we looked into causes and ramifications for the shortage, and we just started discussing some of the ways to alleviate it. What approach should we start taking as of now?
The first thing we should do is pass the Resident Physician Shortage Act that is before Congress right now so that we can produce more doctors. That's the short answer. The longer answer gets into the other things I talked about. We need to produce more physicians, but we also need to have our healthcare professions working in teams more and better. And then we need to figure out how to use technology better to improve access to care and the efficiency with which we provide care, but not in a way that stresses out our healthcare professionals.
So we did see that during the pandemic, and it's expected to be even during the post-pandemic, an acceleration in the virtual platform for the purposes of healthcare. Do you think this is a mitigating factor?
It could be. We haven't seen any clear evidence of that. I mean, and there's sort of two parts of my answer to that, if I may. One is the general sort of pre-COVID answer, and then I want to talk about how COVID might fit into that. Pre-COVID, we actually looked at what effect various telehealth and telemedicine technologies might have on the capacity of our healthcare system, and specifically our physician workforce, to provide care, with the hopes that what we would see is that if deployed effectively, it would actually expand capacity, could help us address the shortage. What we found in reality was just all over the place. There was no conclusive evidence one way or the other. There are specific instances of telehealth and telemedicine being deployed really effectively in terms of supporting care and improving that. But there was, pre-COVID, no evidence that it was definitively going to expand our capacity to provide care and thus help alleviate the shortage. We will keep paying attention to that in hopes that we will see some evidence one way or the other. But last time we looked at it, which was not very long ago, we hadn't. Then along comes COVID, and suddenly everybody is all telehealth all the time to the extent that they can be, or at least that's the impression we've gotten. The truth is more nuanced and complex than that. Yes, use of telehealth has gone up phenomenally. I myself have used it in ways that I never thought I would, and I'm hoping that we can hold on to some of that because I think it holds promise for improving access to care. My concern is, though, that in this sudden expansion of telehealth, which I would argue on balance is a good thing, is largely benefiting the folks who already had decent access to care. They're just replacing their in-person care with telecare, right? And ultimately, one of the promises of telehealth is improving access to care for those who struggle with access. And I think that's the bridge we need to focus on building. Also, I will say that some preliminary numbers I've seen suggest that as soon as in-person care becomes available again, folks tend to move away from providing care remotely. And so we need to look at that and ask ourselves, how can we balance it properly so that the care that can be effectively, efficiently delivered in a quality way remotely can be to improve access and efficiency, but when is in-care still the preferred mode? And then how do we scale that out? And of course, part of that comes down to, will the increased reimbursement that CMS is supporting right now be continued?
You brought up actually several very good points. In fact, some of the rural care healthcare professionals I get to speak to tell me that they still have dial-in for the purposes of their internet and so do their patients. So that's been a huge limiting factor.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I find myself talking about a lot. We've actually tracked the uptake of various telehealth modalities in some of our own research. And what we've seen is that, you know, yeah, there's been a steady rise, but it's mostly been in more urban areas where they have the infrastructure to support it. And yet everybody talks about how telehealth could reach more remote and rural areas, just as you're saying, where the infrastructure largely isn't there. And so if we want to realize the promise of telehealth, then we need to invest in infrastructure first.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'd love to talk to you about team, especially the team approach to care and everybody working at scope of practice. So where do you think advanced practice providers actually fit into this scenario?
Advanced practice providers fit into all scenarios. they are an essential part of our nation's healthcare provision. We include them in all of our projections work, in fact. Specifically, we look at and include advanced practice nurses and PAs because they definitely affect our capacity to provide care. And to various extents, depending on where you are and what specialty you're talking about, they help meet some of the demand. And so one of the reasons we're not projecting even more dramatic shortages is because of advanced practice providers. And working together with physicians and other healthcare professionals, there doesn't seem to be any doubt in our minds that, you know, that's an important part of not just addressing shortages, but is sort of improving care delivery, right?
And actually looking further into the team approach to care, is there any evaluation in the study in reference to expanding the scope of clinical pharmacists?
It's funny, we've been asked about that, but we haven't looked at that in our projections work. And I haven't seen any data on it that we could use to inform our projections. I don't know of any studies that have documented an actual impact on the demand for physicians from clinical pharmacists. But I don't mean to imply that pharmacists aren't an important part of the overall care delivery team. Indeed, they are. It's just, and we have not included them in our projections, and I haven't seen any data that would allow us to do so.
Has there been any implication of the hospitalist movement in affecting the physician shortage?
Not really. I mean, our projections include hospitalists. And hospitalists are an important part of the physician workforce, but they're included. So our shortage projections assume hospitalists. And so there's no indication that somehow they're going to help address the shortage. They help provide care, and they're a crucial part of doing that. But we still need a lot more physicians than we've got.
Would addressing some of the inefficiencies we have in healthcare today, for instance, late startup for the OR, no-shows in the practice, delays for other reasons, help with the shortage? Or in other words, help with some of the efficiencies would help with that?
Yeah, I always get a bit nervous when people ask about those kinds of things. And if I may, I'd like to take some time to explain why. Because most of those let's just improve efficiency approaches are based on mathematical models where they're just moving numbers around in equations or spreadsheets and say, well, if we just did this, they don't take into account sort of the human aspect of delivering care. I mean, I have seen numbers about the number of patient no-shows, et cetera. And if we somehow reduce that, wouldn't we fit in more patients? But have you been to a physician office yet? You get there and you already have to wait for a while. And that's with the no-shows. Can you imagine if there were no no-shows? And let's take a look at how healthcare has changed and sort of put increasing pressure on physicians and other healthcare professionals already to be more and more efficient while they're also filling out longer and longer forms on electronic health records. And the documentation requirements are growing. The amount of time physicians spend doing clinical documentation already is just, you know, is almost unbelievable. And so the idea of asking them to be more efficient when we already know the physician workforce is burnt out. 40% of the physician workforce is burnt out on a weekly basis. And I can't imagine that COVID is making that any better. So to walk into that and say, we want you to see more patients at a faster pace, just doesn't seem humanly reasonable, even if the math seems to think that it would work. So I'm trepidatious, to say the least, when it comes to those sorts of approaches. I think the, you know, the real solutions are the ones that I've already outlined, where we need more physicians so that if anything, they can spend a little more time with patients rather than less. And that includes working in teams to allow more providers to provide more quality time with patients, which not only do the patients benefit from, but the providers do too. Physicians and other healthcare professionals, they go into those professions because they want to help people. They're healers, by, you know, it's a calling, right? And so the more that we can emphasize that rather than efficiency, I think the better off we all are.
That's actually a very insightful answer. Thank you. So besides dealing with the shortages just in the sheer numbers of physicians, do we need to address any gender inequalities?
Yes, we do. And you may have heard that we recently hit a point where half of the medical students entering medical school right now are now those who identify as female. So that's a watershed moment. But it's going to take a long, long time before we actually see 50% of the workforce female. We're at about a third now, which, given where we were a few decades ago, represents significant progress, don't get me wrong. But there are, within those numbers indicating progress, some significant inequities dwelling, salary inequities. And if we look at differences in the composition of specialties, what we see, in fact, and this relates to the salary inequities, that certain specialties are still 90-95% male. Whereas, you know, other specialties, even though the entire workforce is only about a third female, they're 60% or more female. And not surprisingly, there are salary differences between those groups of specialties. But while we're talking about gender and the physician workforce, I'd be remiss too if I didn't talk about the issues of harassment and assault, which we know are huge problems in multiple professions. But the National Academies of Science and Engineering and Medicine just, was it last year or the year before, I think, so I'm losing track of time during the pandemic. I hope you'll forgive me for that. Put out a report documenting exactly how bad that problem is. And we ourselves at AEMC have paid a lot of attention to that issue and have begun some initiatives to address it. And the workforce studies team that I lead has collected a lot of data on this to show exactly how bad the problem is. And so when we talk about gender in the physician workforce, we need to talk about the problems of harassment and assault and the need to address those as well, along with the other inequities that I've talked about.
Yeah. So we already brought up about that greater than 30% of the pool of physicians are over the age of 16. That's expected to get even higher. But this is the first time in the history of our country that we have literally five generations of physicians. Are there any issues concerning that?
I've heard a lot of people conjecture that there are, but I don't believe that there are any issues regarding generational differences amongst physicians. We have seen some changes over time in physicians in terms of work hours and work patterns, but those have occurred along with changes in how healthcare is delivered, which is independent of various generations of physicians. It just happens to occur alongside it. So the differences we're seeing in work hours and work patterns, I think, are a spurious correlation when they're attributed to generational differences, and rather they have more to do with changes in how healthcare is done and delivered. For instance, we see a lot more physicians working as employees now, as opposed to decades past, as you know, where it was much more common for them to set up solo practices. I don't think that there's necessarily a generational effect happening there. It's just the way we deliver healthcare has changed. And so more physicians are now employees. And because younger physicians are entering a system where that's the case, younger physicians are more likely to be employees. That doesn't mean that's necessarily their preference. It may be, but it doesn't necessarily mean it. And I think, if anything, we benefit from having that many generations in the physician workforce, because that's just another aspect of diversity. And a diverse workforce is a stronger workforce in many, many ways.
Very good points. Any final thoughts, Michael?
Yes, if I may. I would like to return to the beginning and point out that we really are concerned about a growing shortage of physicians in this nation. And keeping in mind that we're starting with the assumption that there's already a shortage, but that's based on federal government estimates of the size of the shortage, which is really conservative and only covers two specialties, primary care and psychiatry. To the extent that we already have shortages in other specialties, all of our projections are conservative. And in fact, what we're looking at is worse than what our numbers say. So we're giving a conservative estimate of the shortage we're looking at. And we're talking about the health of the nation here. So it's a problem that we need to address. And it takes a long time to train physicians. So we can't wait. The other point I would like to emphasize, because I just think it's so crucial, is the issue of physician burnout, physician well-being. It's a crisis in our country, and it was prior to the pandemic. And I can't imagine that working conditions during COVID-19 are doing anything other than adding to that. And so we as a nation need to take that into account and find better ways to support the people who ultimately care for us. You know, we need to care for them so they can care for us. And I'd like to see more done along those lines.
Michael, we've reached the end of our discussion. Thanks for taking time for joining us during these past two episodes. I appreciate your insights into the physician shortage. And to our listeners, please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. Also, please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast on the latest in healthcare strategies. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.